This is the last meeting for the quarter, no?
One more.
Oh. Hey, good meaning. Yeah. Can I have a problem with technology? Okay, Remuro, can we start? Can I ask you to pray for us this morning? And then,
good morning. Surely, this might be the last but one of our meeting before the Easter holidays. And something just strikes in my head. It appears twice in the Bible. It's not more than twice. The book of Numbers, the Bible says, just as Moses lifted the copper snake on the tree, so the Son of Man must be lifted on the tree, so that whoever is going to believe in him will not die, but will have eternal life. Not long, the country and the world will be celebrating, of course the advanced countries will be celebrating the death and the crucifixion of the Lord Jesus Christ. It's a time, unfortunately.
No, please, pray.
Yeah. This is our last moment, but don't stop God. Otherwise, God will stop you.
No.
So, it's a time when we normally have unnecessary road carnages. And I'm going to wish, she's not going to give me the chance next week. I'll not be there. Maybe. And I'm saying, in as much as we will be praying for the road carnages, road accidents that will be killing and claiming many lives, let us also pray for ourselves and our children against this killer disease which has invaded our country, coronavirus. Can we bow and pray? Our dear Heavenly Father, and our Father through the blood shed on the cruel cross of Calvary, Master, we say thank you. Thank you that you can still grant to us life. We thank you, Lord, that we are able to go around in our healthy condition. We are not unaware of the killer disease that continues to ravage our country, that continues to ravage the world. And Lord God, inasmuch as we'll be marching towards the Easter holidays, we pray that those precious blood of our Master Jesus Christ, which was shed on the cruel cross of Calvary, may come down to us as a healing balm. We pray and we thank you for this opportunity as a portfolio committee. Guide us all, guide the chair, guide the presenters, and everybody who is going to come up with contribution. All this we pray and we thank you. In the lovely name of our Lord and Master Jesus Christ. By faith we say, Amen.
There is a difference between preach and pray. I still maintain. Any apologies?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. Apologies have been received from Honorable Shabalala, Honorable Tarabella Machezi, Honorable Supers, and Honorable Mashabella. Then they won't be able to be with us this morning. And then also receive correspondence from both the Minister, Deputy Minister, and the Office for their unavailability. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Those are the apologies. Honorable members, we've got the briefing from DBE on the update programs for improving the foundational skills of literacy and numeracy. And then after that, we will consider the minutes of the last meeting. Can we adopt the agenda? Honorable Atoms? Morning, the chair that the air has moved to adopt the agenda. Any seconder? Honorable Mwabo.
Chairperson, I rise to support adoption of that agenda as it is.
Okay. Thank you very much. Dr. Maboya, let me give to you then to lead us with the presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Good morning to you all. I am today joined by Mrs. Mrs. Modiba is responsible for curriculum at DBE. She's an acting director responsible for R46 curriculum, which is the GET R2, in fact it's R29, which is GET, I'm sorry. So it's a whole range of the phases that she's responsible for. So, but I will be taking you through the presentation. So as you rightly pointed out, this is about the report on how far have we gone at DBE in terms of the foundational skills of literacy and numeracy. So this is the presentation outline. We're going to look at the purpose of the presentation, we're going to look at the problem statement, the strategic focus, background and context, progress and foundational skills program, monitoring, validation and statistics, as well as the recommendations. So this is the purpose of the presentation. The purpose is to present to the portfolio committee an update on the programs for improving the foundational skills of literacy and numeracy. This is the program statement, which basically refers to the statement which was made by our Honorable Minister N.G. Motsekga in July 2019, and it points to the fact that although there are various factors affecting high school children that may trigger the dropping out of school, evidence shows that the root cause of dropping out of school is inadequate learning foundation, and that there is a clear link between educational outcomes and later life outcomes such as access to jobs. So what this is pointing out to is a clear linkage between the foundational skills of reading, literacy and numeracy to the overall educational outcomes, but also most importantly looking at it as a contributor to the socio-economic transformation agenda of the government. Strategic focus. In this section, Honorable Chair, we just pointed to the different developmental agendas that from which we derive our mandate. This mandate in particular of improving the foundational skills comes from a number of mandates, including the United Nations mandate, which covers in particular Sustainable Development Goal number 4. So which points to the fact that it is only if we provide quality ECD programs, but also if we provide quality primary and secondary education programs that we can be able to universalize literacy and numeracy such that everyone in the world should end up being literate and being numerate. So as you can see, it's about a world with universal literacy. So it's about universal coverage of numeracy and literacy. Then the next one, I think there's something wrong with the slide. Because the top part is cut. I don't know know if Luella will be able to help us with that. I'm struggling a little bit. But then the second agenda that we derive our mandate from is the continental one, which refers to our agenda 2063, the Africa we want. And the agenda itself points to the fact that for us to achieve 100% literacy and numeracy, it is important for us to... But there is something...
No, I think it's fine because those are the headlines. You can just speak on them.
Okay.
The presentation
it's
is
fine.
So you can continue.
So what we are saying is that given your agenda 2063, which is about the Africa we want, also highlights the importance of universal literacy and numeracy. And therefore, we're looking at the NDP itself. The NDP also points to the fact that we need to make sure that there is high quality universal ECD, but also quality school education, and making sure that we really build the necessary foundation. In particular, the NDP points to the fact that we need to improve literacy, numeracy, mathematics and science outcomes, such that about 90% of our learners in grade 3, 6 and 9 must achieve 50% or more in our annual national assessment in literacy, mathematics and science. And that also goes down to our sector plan. I know that we are supposed to be talking about action plan to 2024, but what we have there is still speaking to 2019, but all the same, it's about our trajectory towards 2030. So we need also, in terms of our sector plan, which has got about 27 goals, one of the goals refers to an increase in the number of learners in grade 3, 6 and 9 who can be able to perform at the minimum competencies in languages as well as mathematics. Here, Chair, we are just providing some background and context to this conversation to say that we also need to understand the shape and size of the task that we have in terms of making sure that we improve numeracy and literacy in the education system. So this is just to give you an idea of the size of, in particular, primary education in the country. And here we are referring to education from grade R to grade 6. And we are saying that here we are dealing with 7.4 million learners who are in your grade R to 6. And we are talking about 236,000 teachers or educators, as well as 15,800 learners. And I mean schools, I'm sorry. And then we also want to highlight the fact that here, because we are talking about numeracy and literacy, we also have to maybe underscore the fact that we are dealing here with about 11 official languages, but also included to that would be the South African Sign Language. Population of children in South Africa. So here we're just making reference to the fact that we do have about 8.2 million children who are in the age cohort 0 to 6 in the country. So this is according to the media population estimate of 2016. So it might be not be very updated, this, but it just gives us a sense of, you know, the scope and the size of the task. So this is what we are talking about when we are talking about foundational skills, which have to be developed in the early years of schooling. Early years of schooling, referring to, in particular, the foundation phase, which is from grade R up to grade 3 and then the intermediate phase, but also not losing sight of the fact that we also have the same phases but in our special schools. So this is the coverage that we are talking about. Reading literacy and numeracy outcomes. The section will be dealing with the different measures that we have been using in terms of looking at the trend with regard to our learner performance, both international, regional, as well as local studies. So, as colleagues may recall, we used to have what we call the ANA, the Annual National Assessment, which extended from 2012 up to 2014. So the reason why we had this study, or the ANA, was basically to benchmark ourselves as a country to know where we stand in terms of numeracy and literacy, the levels at which our learners were performing. So this was a measure that was put in place by the department to ensure that from time to time we are able to gauge ourselves as to where we are in terms of these competencies. So when you look at our performance from from 2012 to 2014, when the ANA came to an end, you can clearly see that in terms of grade 3, there was an upward trend in the level of competency of our learners in mathematics in particular. Looking at grade 6, you can see that there was also some improvements that were registered, but when it comes to grade 9, we have really not been seeing a lot of improvement. So this was a way of us keeping ourselves on the toe and making sure that we try to improve from year to year. And the same would also hold with home languages, with grade 3 showing lot of improvement. Actually, if you look at the last bar shows that in grade 3 we have surpassed the 60%, whereby we are saying that 60% of our learners, more than 60% of our learners, were able to perform at 50% and above in home languages. And that was also the case even in terms of mathematics. As you can see, we had surpassed the 60% and much as we did not do very well in grade 6, but there was that upward trend. The same with grade 6 home languages, we had also improved above the 60%, such that more than 60% of our learners could obtain at least 50% of the home language mark. And as you can see, grade 9 has always not been relatively speaking. And this is about the first additional language. And as you can see, grade 3, by then we had not introduced English first additional language in our foundation phase. So we only have the information for grade 6 as well as grade 9. But with regard to the first additional language, as you can see, we were not doing well in grade 6 as well as in grade 9. We also wanted to share with the portfolio committee the reading and comprehension level as an indication of our performance in both PELS and FATMEC. But as you can see, there is that upward trend in terms of our performance in FATMEC. FATMEC 4, as you can see, in fact, this is about reading. And we have FATMEC 4, where we have really improved by moving to that 538 point, which is above the normal 500 center point that has become a benchmark for performance in this international and regional sense. And the first two blue bars refer to our performance in both grade 4 and grade 6 in respect of the PEL, the last PEL. As you can see, there is an upward movement, meaning that our learners perform better as they go along in the system, meaning that whatever foundation that would have been laid earlier than grade 5, now we are beginning to see some dividends. In terms of mathematics, we are looking at our performance both in SACMAT as well as in the trends in math and science studies. And as you can see with SACMAT 3 and SACMAT 4, there is that improvement that we have registered. But when you look at teams, we have registered some improvement from 352 to 372. But when you look at that red straight line, which is your linear list, it shows that when you compare our performance in mathematics in the two studies, that is in SACMAT as well as in TIMSS, then the results in TIMSS show that we are not doing well when we compare with our results from the SACMAT study. We also looked at the performance in SACMAT 4, which has recently been written. And when you look at this, you can see that we are comparing our performance between SACMAT 3 and SACMAT 4. And SACMAT 3, when you look at the performance both in reading as well as, and as in mathematics, clearly you can see that in SACMAT 3 we only had three provinces, that is the Western Cape, Gauteng and Northwest, that achieved scores in both reading and math above the mean score of 500. But when you look at our performance in SACMAT 4, almost all the provinces are above the 500 center point, I think except for only one province, which is Limpopo. I'm talking about now taking both reading and mathematics at the same time. So Limpopo would be the only one. But
and they are from there.
But Honorable Chair, I think what is important about the study is not about us comparing ourselves with other provinces and so on. It's more about the diagnostic reports that come out of this study.
Mm-hmm.
Those diagnostic reports are the ones that help us to shape our intervention program going forward. So from SACMAT, for instance, we have seen a significant improvement in mathematics and reading scores, respectively, when we compare SACMAT 4 with SACMAT 3. We have seen an achievement of 528 points for reading and 562 points for mathematics, both of them being above the 500 center point. This is an improvement from the 2007 score of 495 and 500 respectively. So surely there has been a significant improvement. However, we also noticed that there's a significant reduction in the number of non-numerate and non-literate learners at grade 6 level. Confirmation that early acquisition of foundational skills of reading is a critical matter. Still on SACMAT 4 results, we have also noticed from the results that South Africa has the third highest percentage of pupils with access to material for learning, which is commendable for our country. we would know that when the analysis is done, we also look at contextual factors to say what are those contextual factors that could have contributed to the improvement of the results. So one of them is the availability of text material. So it was found that South Africa has the third highest percentage of people with access to reading material. But South Africa has one of the highest percentage of grade 6 people who attended preschool. I'm talking about SACMEC. And as you know, SACMEC is mostly your African countries who are participating, both Southern as well as Southeastern. And of course, we also outlined there some of the possible contributor factors. And here is also about the performance in terms of different provinces, as I indicated. The message is not about comparing this, but it's also about what is it that you are doing in terms of the lessons drawn from this study. So as you can see, provincial mathematics performance, you can clearly see that there are elements of inequalities which we have to seriously deal with. The provinces that are doing well, as you can see, Western Cape and Gauteng, and followed by Mpumalanga. So there is that element of inequality in the performance of our learners that we have to be seriously concerned about. And this is the difference between the highest and lowest performing provinces is 98 points. It's quite a lot.
The Mpopo is always...
No, number last is different.
Then... All right, so
I
like that.
Yeah. But what I could also say about Limpopo is the fact that when it comes to mathematics, we have quality results from Limpopo in as far as mathematics is concerned. And Limpopo is also amongst those few provinces where we have seen an increased participation in mathematics. Enrollment in the NSC in particular. So I'm sure there is something magical that Limpopo is doing in as far as math is concerned. And then in as far as KIMS is concerned, we have seen some improvement, but also we also noticed some inequality, as I indicated. PEL is another study that you participate in, wherein mostly it's our grade 4 learners. In fact, it's called our grade 4 learners, and it's about the reading, progress in international reading literacy, and these are the achievements. And as you can see, South Africa is at 320, and normally the benchmark would be your 500 center point. And as you can see, we are still below that 500 center point. We performed at 320. We performed significantly below other countries except for Egypt in 2016 when we wrote the last task. There's a high percentage of grade 4 learners who did not reach the minimum benchmark for reading literacy. In actual fact, I'm sure you have heard about this, the fact that 78% of our learners cannot read with understanding. So this is something that we have to seriously deal with. And in grade 5, learners showed marginal improvement when 10-year trends were considered. And these are the implications. This is what you got from the studies, what I was referring to today. It's also about qualitative data that we draw from these studies. And these are the implications on curriculum. We need to increase proportion of time spent on reading in foundation and intermediate phases. That's what the studies are telling us. We also need to review text length and comprehension strategies. We also infrastructural indications are such that we urgently need to reduce the class size or class sizes to policy stipulations. We also need to provide to libraries and to review interventions on IEP solutions. This is what, I think this is the message that we need to take out of this study, rather than just looking at the qualitative data or quantitative data. Classroom practice implications. Strengthening teaching of reading literacy and training of pedagogical content knowledge of teachers across all languages in foundation phase, especially in the African languages. This is one big message that we are taking out of the study. And the increased proportion of formal and informal reading time, and also looking at the critical reading comprehension strategies, increased reading resources, and also appoint only foundation phase qualified teachers in the foundation phase. So this is what we are taking about the studies that we have shared. Now, what is the progress that we have made so far in terms of implementing foundational skills of literacy and numeracy programs? We started by sharing the principles that guided or that begin, that continue to underpin our programs in as far as literacy and numeracy are concerned. We invest a lot in early intervention, such that we don't only look at these skills when it comes to greater, I mean your higher grade, at the level of maybe intermediate, we start very early, as early as in our ECD program. And then active pedagogy also underpins our approaches, evidence-based interventions, balanced approach to ensure the holistic development of our children, and the issue of inclusivity is also taken into account as and when we develop these programs and implement them. And just making reference to our president also emphasized with regard to investment in early learning. We start by sharing with the committee the curriculum that we have developed, that we have put in place for 0 to 5 to 4 year old, which is called the National Curriculum Framework. And embedded in this national curriculum framework would be quality and age appropriate early learning and development programs, which are embedded in the curriculum. So we're talking here about early grade reading as well as early grade mathematics that lead to learners having to read with meaning at grade 4, very early, from 0 to 4. A matter which has also been thoroughly researched, especially in the area of neuroscience, that the earlier you start, the better. I think the presentation that we got last week on ECD, especially from Elisa Labantwana, pointed to that exactly. And we also think that we do have a credible curriculum that we are implementing in the foundation phase, and that curriculum is such that it is well structured and it is based on play-based educational programs. So that is in as far as the curriculum is concerned, to say that we do have the curriculum that already speaks to the foundational skills that we are talking about. And this is just to elaborate on the curriculum that we have in respect of the different age cohorts. As you can see, we are talking about the National Curriculum Framework, which covers babies, toddlers, and young children, even before they get to the foundation phase. And I must indicate that when we present this internationally, we are being applauded because not a lot of countries that do have the curriculum for this age group. So we make sure that in this curriculum we already embed elements of emergent and early reading and mathematics. this is the overview of the type of approach that we have adopted as a system, which is what you call the play-based learning. Now we are working in collaboration with UNICEF as well as Scotland to ensure that we have our practitioners as well as our foundation-based educators who will be able to implement this approach in the foundation phase as well as in ECG. So the target was around 150,000 foundation phase educators as well as ECG practitioners, which have been targeted for this particular program. And the funding for this program is from the Legal Foundation. So we have packaged the presentation in such a way that for each and every program that we are referring to, we give you just a snapshot of what the program is all about, what the program targets at, what the project has been able to achieve up to so far, and what are the future plans. So I'm not necessarily going to go through each one of them, but suffice to say that we do have this play-based learning as one of the programs that we are running, the program that is mainly around our approach to the teaching of math as well as the teaching of literacy and numeracy in our schools. So the program, we have it already, is running in about three provinces, that is in Gauteng, in the Free State, as well as in the Eastern Cape. That is still in its pilot stage. But going forward, as you can see, we'll be rolling this out to as many provinces as possible. So these are the achievements so far. We have been able to train more than 160, both including educators and practitioners, on this program. We started in 2019. This is a free online accredited in-service training. It's a course that we have packaged, it's online, and anyone is able to access that. And over and above that, we also have a foundation-based initiative, which is taking place in three provinces, as I indicated. And the achievement so far is that we have been able to reach 554 quintile 1 to 3 schools. We have been able to train 3,816 teachers, and we have reached out to 125,000 children, and in addition to 78 officials who were trained across the three provinces. And future plans are such that the Play Online Free Accredited in-service training will continue, and it will be embedded in our DBE cloud in 2020, and then foundation phase initiative phase 2 rollout will be in the Eastern Cape. That is for 2020. So all the three provinces, all the districts will now be covered, and 2021 will then be rolling it out to other provinces. That is the foundation phase initiative. But in as far as the online training is concerned, it is free for everyone. And here we are just showing some pictures of what is happening in terms of this approach that we are talking about. It's an approach where learners are learning in their natural environment. A natural environment where we know that learners naturally like to play.
Mm.
So this is where learning is taking place. And this type of approach engenders innovation, imaginary thinking, and all what you can think of what we need for our future. And then we also have a very sort of the same environment of fun. We also have what you call spelling bee competition. This is a competition which where our provinces participate, and it is about learners learning in a very fun way, a way that is full of play and so on. Spelling bee, where learners give those oral presentations, and this takes place on an annual basis. Now we have programs that are going into competency. Honorable Chair, here we are talking about a program that is called our Primary School Reading Improvement Program. It's called PSRIP. This is the overarching program that we follow as a department to ensure that we improve the literacy and reading outcomes in grades 1 to 6 with a key focus on teacher development and support. That is PSRIP. It's been rolled out in all the provinces, and we will also indicate what the future plans are. So this is a program whose objective is to promote reading as a national priority in all three, in all the early grades, that is from grade R up to grade 6, as I indicated. But next to that, because of space, we thought we must also deal with the other program, which will also be an approach going forward, which deals with mathematics. Just next to that one, we do have what you call the teaching of mathematics for understanding. I think this also derives from the team studies, which showed that most of our learners could not, I mean, in their responses to the questions, it was clear that they could not rise above the level of recall in terms of answering to the questions. So they lack the conceptual understanding of mathematics. So this is the new approach that we have introduced, and the approach is, as I indicated, about bringing about a balanced approach to the teaching of mathematics, so that we don't only concentrate on procedures, we don't only concentrate on recall, but we have a very balanced approach that also looks into conceptual understanding of mathematics in terms of problem solving and so on. So this is the approach that we have adopted in as far as mathematics is concerned. And it is about training teachers on how to teach mathematics differently, so that we don't only look at, you know, so just simple steps to say you multiply, you subtract, you do that. It's more than that. So it's more about teaching for understanding. And as I indicated with this one, we are also focusing on training of teachers, and I'm sure the presentation itself has given you some details with regard to the approach, with regard to the future plans and what we have achieved. So in as far as PSRIP is concerned, then moving from the math one to the PSRIP, because we have tried to juxtapose the two. Material design workshop was held with stakeholders, new big books were developed, and 268 subject advisors were trained in grading pedagogy, because that is what is important. What is important is the methodology of teaching reading, and this is what the program is about. But added to that, obviously, it would also include the development of materials. And in as far as the math one is concerned, those are the numbers in terms of the number of teachers that have been trained, the number of subject advisors that have been trained, and once we have subject advisors trained, then it is easy for subject advisors then to scale the program itself. And these are the beneficiaries in terms of PSRIP. 904 foundation phase schools and 1,772 intermediate schools are benefiting from this. So it does have a quite significant presence in our school. We are not yet where we want to be, but the indication is that at least we are making some strides. And then in as far as the math one is concerned, we are doing it in three provinces, Eastern Cape, KZN, and Limpopo. And if you, I were to also explain why these provinces, it's because the trends have shown that there are some inequalities in as far as numeracy, literacy, and mathematics is concerned. So that is why we will be a little bit biased to this, your mostly your rural provinces. And these are the schools that are participating, the number of teachers, and the number of learners who are already benefiting from that. And these are the future plans. I'm not going to go into that. But we also have programs that are meant to not only look at the capacity of teachers, but also to ensure that there is sufficient support and supervision for teachers as and when they deal with the skills around numeracy, literacy, and reading. So these are the programs. We do have one program which is called the Early Grade Reading Study, EGRS. It's a study because it is about research, but at the same time, it is research that is developmental. It's research that is also providing a developmental program. So this one, this is where it is. It is in Northwest and in Mpumalanga, and mainly it's about looking at what are those theories of change, what is the theory of change that we need. So this particular program is focusing on the support for teachers in terms of providing coaches, on-site coaches to teachers, but it also provides learning materials, and it also looks at issues of teacher development. So this is one project that is also assisting in terms of providing support to the teachers on site. And we also have another one very close to that one, which is what we call our Rural Education Assistant Project, that is RIP. And this RIP is also happening in three provinces, your most rural provinces. It's happening in the Eastern Cape again, in Limpopo, as well as in KZN. And this is where we have employed teacher assistants, 750 of them, who are assisting to support the teachers in terms of the reading, literacy, and numeracy programs, both in the foundation phase and in the intermediate phase. So this is the type of support. So it's pretty much almost the same as what you have for EGRS, which is your early grade reading. But this one is all-encompassing because it's looking at reading, it's looking at numeracy, it's looking at literacy. So these teacher assistants are providing support to teachers on site. And these are the beneficiaries. I'm not going to go into that. And these are the achievements and also the future plans. The next one will be on the support that we provide. In respect of, again, reading, literacy, and numeracy. And this is a new project that will be implemented in Mpumalanga in two provinces. Two districts in Mpumalanga. So this one is looking at the training of foundation phase language and mathematics subject advisors, capacity building. So it is quite systemic in its approach because it's about capacitating the system at all levels, looking at the district level and saying how do we capacitate our subject advisors, looking at the school level and saying how do we capacitate our HODs, before we even capacitate the teacher. So this is the type of support that is provided. So this is a fairly new program, and we are going to report on it going forward. So this is what is being offered, and this is just an outline of the subjects that are being covered. It's quite extensive because it covers almost how many languages, about 9 languages altogether. Even those languages that have been marginalized are now getting the necessary support. And we are also providing ICT devices to teachers through this particular program. And we also have programs, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, that look at the provision of learning and teaching support material. As the studies have indicated, it is important that from time to time we ensure that there is enough material at school level that will help to support both teachers as well as learners in terms of the foundational skills. So we do have a particular program that is looking into this. And the program that we have is on the DBE webbooks. And we are quite familiar with this one. It covers all the languages. And every year, we are rolling out about 60 million webbooks that go out to schools. They are being printed and distributed to schools. They cover languages. They cover mathematics from grade R up to grade 9. So this is what we are providing, and those are the beneficiaries. The aim of this is to ensure that there is sufficient text. Because as you would know, there are some families or some homes where you don't even have a book, one book. So at least we are affording this as an opportunity to those families that cannot afford to have text in their homes. So this is what we are doing. This is the impact, and we are just showing pictures of those workbooks that we are providing. But what is also important to note is that our workbooks are now interactive, and also the fact that we have adapted our workbooks to Braille. So our textbooks are also Braille, so that we also include those learners who are in our special schools. These were adapted, as I indicated, to Braille and also to augmentative and alternative communication for those learners who've got the hearing problem. So these are the examples of those Braille webbooks that we are sharing with you. And then, yes, this is where we are. But over and above what we are doing, we are also looking into the checking of learner proficiencies in this literacy and numeracy level. To say that we can't always be waiting for these international and regional studies. We have to have our own instruments that help us to measure or to track the proficiency of learner levels in terms of literacy and numeracy. And we do have a program that is called EGRA, Early Grade Reading Reading Assessment. I've spoken about EGRS before, which is Early Grade Reading Studies, but this one is Early Grade Reading Assessment. So this is what the program is all about. It's about checking reading proficiency levels of learners at regular intervals in all 11 official languages offered as MOLT and EFAL, in order to inform our intervention. Like I'm saying, the studies that we have been referring to are not taking place annually. Some of them take place in intervals of 5 years, 4 years, and 6 years. So we can't wait. So on a regular basis in the classroom, the teachers now are able to measure the proficiency levels of our learners. And EGRA is one of those instruments that we are using. So beneficiaries, Quintal 1 to 3 schools, as you can see in phase 1 and phase 2 and phase 3, that is the number of schools that we have already been able to cover is close to about 6,000 plus schools that we have covered. And grade 1 to 3 teachers, those are the number of teachers that have already been trained, and the learners that have already begun to benefit would be taking from 2016 phase 1, you can see that we have really made some strides. And these are the components of this, and I can also indicate that ECRA has also been incorporated into the primary school reading improvement program, so that it is also embedded in that. So these are the achievements so far, and future plans is to try to universalize ECRA in quintiles 1 to 3 in 2021 and quintiles 4 to 5 by 2023. I know that we haven't been able to have a consolidated report that says this is where we are right now. Now, this year the focus will be on making sure that we try to come up with a standardized way of measuring proficiency in reading, such that going forward we can be able to provide such reports. And systemic evaluation. We spoke about the fact that ANA came to an end in 2014. Now, in place of ANA, we have developed what you call systemic evaluation instrument that will be replacing ANA. So this will be triannual systemic evaluation, meaning that it will take place every 3 years, unlike the ANA, which was taking place annually, which is what I think the unions raised as a concern, to say that if it's a systemic evaluation instrument, it cannot be done annually, because you still have to give the system enough time to can correct from the previous systemic evaluation cycle. So as a result, the department has now come up with a systemic evaluation framework that is going to be administered on a sample of grade 3, 6 and 9 learners, and then two subjects will be assessed, that is mathematics and languages. So it is pretty much in line with the foundation skills that we are talking about. And this will be about testing learners, but looking at contextual factors in terms of whole school evaluation, but looking also at the systemic support that is being provided to those schools and those teachers. So it will have those three components. Unlike the ANA, which was just focusing on the learner, this one will also be looking at those contextual factors, so that we can be able to inform the system appropriately going forward. So this is where we are, and the intention is that this will be written at the end of this year, and it will be targeting a sample of about 3,000 schools in grade 3, 6 and 9 in October 2020. So if it's done this year, it means the next one will be after 3 years from now. So this is where we are now in terms of trying to ensure that we have evidence that will support our programs going forward. Then there are also programs on foundational skills that are focusing particularly on advocacy and campaigns. So this is what we have. We have the National Reading Coalition, which is quite a big program, and we are doing this in collaboration with the National Education Collaboration Trust, the NECT. So the NECT is leading this program together with the Reach to Lead campaign. So the aim of this project is to mobilize support of all reading interventions and to provide a common response to the reading challenge. Beneficiaries will be learners with more emphasis on ECD and South Asian learners, teachers, scholars, and communities, and community stakeholders. And the profile, the approaches that were start by identifying the sectors in 9 provinces, and that has already been done, and then they have been profiled accordingly. So these are the achievements so far, and the future plan is that the NRC is currently in process to mobilize volunteer support in communities to work with parents and other stakeholders to ensure that we promote reading, all the reading promotion. Reading to Lead campaign, this is a campaign that is run from the minister's office, which is also looking at making sure that we mobilize various sectors, which include but not limited to business, government, labor, NGOs, higher education, and civil society to participate actively so in the promotion of reading. And these are the achievements so far. We've been able to establish 1,681 reading clubs. We have been able to undertake numerous book clubs in collaboration with some of the shopping centers and so on. And those are the future plans. And so strategic partnerships, surely this is one program that we cannot run without strong partnerships. So we have just given you the list of partnerships that we are working with, and also the type of areas of focus that they are dealing with. And I must indicate that the list is not exhaustive. So these are the partners that we are working with. We also have the Cuban project, where we have a number of Cubans that we were able to recruit and who are already helping in some of our provinces in terms of mathematics. And we also have, we are working with the British Council on issues around English as language and so on. Monitoring and evaluation in as far as this foundational skills programs are concerned. We have what we call the National Strategy for Learner Attainment Framework, which is a framework, a strategic framework that we use to coordinate all the interventions that are happening in provinces. So we do that even in terms of literacy and numeracy. And it also helps us in terms of reporting on numeracy and literacy interventions across the system. In the annual performance plan, the issue of foundational skills have also been included. So it is one of those indicators, or some of the indicators that we will be reporting on will be speaking to the foundational skills of literacy, numeracy, and reading. And then oversight, this is monitoring and support. In our monitoring and support oversight visits, we also focus on provincial plans in terms of numeracy, literacy, and reading, and so on. And we also report in to the Council of Education Ministers and the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education with regard to this foundational school and so on. And the recommendation is that the Portfolio Committee should note the status report on an update on the program for improving the foundational school of literacy and
thank you. Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Dr. Mabuya. Members, that's the presentation on the foundational skills and foundational skills of literacy and numeracy. Can I now turn Honorable King, Honorable Adwans, Dr. Tembekwaya, in that order?
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for the presentation. First, I want to comment on the statement that was made 2018, I think, by the minister, talking about the no-repeat policy. When you look at the reading in foundation phase, when a child can't grasp a simple aspect and there's a no-repeat policy, the child will then move on to grade 3, because that was what the statement alluded to. That will have a huge impact on the learner going forward into the other phases. So I would like to get your view on that and how that policy will have an impact on the learning and numeracy, and literacy and numeracy abilities of learners who could not grasp it at a foundational level. Also, slide 12, when you show the stats of how many kids, children are in foundation phase from grade R to 6, is that also inclusive of learners who have disabilities, that step? Because I see sign language as one of the official languages was not presented in the, which is a great step that the education department has actually made. Multi-grade classes will always be a challenge. I know there is a toolkit out for multi-grade classes, but when I think of a multi-grade class in Tabankulu, where I normally would go to, you would find that it's difficult for that learners to, for the teacher to actually teach in a proper environment. So have you grasped a way of how to deal with that dilemma when it comes to reading? My thing, also coming from a teaching, never had opportunity to teach at the foundation phase though, but it's always key to say repetition, repetition, and repetition. And when you look at the curriculum that's been developed, I have to give credit where credit is due. It is very useful because it has not bogged the curriculum with too much work. So people, as children at least, have a sense of grasping it because they would be repeating it as the year goes on. So I need to give you credit where that is due. Then also remedial educators. I see you were talking there about teacher's assistant. But the one thing that always works in a normal school environment, especially in your grade, your foundation phase level, is to bring back your teachers that have retired. Well, in East London, we have a group of teachers that I know, retired foundation phase teachers, because they realize that the new teachers coming in, especially the Funza teachers, do not have the capacity to actually teach at the foundation level. So have you is there a program where we will look at bringing in some of those teachers who have probably started their own business, and partnering with them to assist in this regard? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you again, Dr. Maboya, for the presentation. I have a few clarity-seeking questions. The first one is on the slide 29 that speaks to infrastructural implications, where it speaks about urgently reducing classroom sizes to policy stipulations, those three bullets. I just want to check how ready are we, how ready are you as the department, because the situation that we saw on the ground, you know, especially when we did the oversight in Limpopo, there was a serious overcrowding in some of the schools that we visited, most especially the primary schools. And remember, there's a call by the president that there must be a migration of ECDs to schools from SDS, social development, to basic education. And I mean, if we're not ready at that level, when are we going to yield the results of what is it that we want to achieve as basic education? I know there are timelines. We did get the presentation last week, but I just want to check, because now it comes again to say there's this challenge of overcrowding in schools, and to get that, you know, to get to see the results of a quality education is one of them is to reduce them to, you know, to policy stipulations. The other one you spoke of, the systematic evaluation that is going to be done in 3 years intervals. And the first study will be, the results will be in October.
The writing in October.
Or the writing in October. Okay. All right. And then we'll know of
2021.
Okay. All right. But we'll remember that one. It was my worry to say Anna was good, but then there was, you know, it was not favored by the educators to say too much work that is done annually. And then at least now there's this one that is 3 years. But I'm looking forward to that one, because I was getting worried now, how are you going to assess the work that you're doing, whether it is still relevant or not. But then if there is this systematic evaluation, I think it still suffices. But I think the other thing, the play is it play based method that has now been introduced.
Yeah,
no, I think also that one is something that has been needed. You know, children need to play. They need to learn and they need to play at the same time. I think that one is a good model that needs to actually to be implemented and be supported. And also we saw the list of partners that are partnering with the department to make sure that there are those programs in place. But also we'll be keeping, you reported that there is also, it's one of the programs that the department is going to report on. So it will keep track and track the performance of whether there's, you know, progress or not, because it's one of the calls by the president to say in his zone of 2019-2020 that children must, you know, read for meaning. Yeah, so this is the steps that we must actually check whether we are going forth of on achieving them. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. I just wanted to comment, although the information has been done, has been addressed by the previous honorable speaker, on the infrastructure implications. So to say, we definitely appreciate that the infrastructure should definitely be addressed, and as it was said, specifically concentrating on the reduction of the class sizes, because the more overcrowded a class, the more problematic the thing. Even in the past, you can't even assess students. It's about the most intelligent learners in class and those that can't even say a word. So it is much appreciated. But my question would be, mention is made that there would be a provision of school libraries, and then I think it is about all the schools, those that don't have libraries in all provinces. Does the funding, I mean the budgetary, is there any budget that is put in place specifically for provision of libraries in schools? Why? Because even in ECDs, a mention was made that reading in actual fact has got an impact on a learner's intelligence from that period until the end of the studies, and studies don't end in the ultimate end. And then the second one, it's about the studies mm-hmm. that we are doing from ANA to the new one. Where the results shows that the grade 3 and 6, there's
improvement recorded. But there's no improvement in actual fact, less improvement in grade 9. My question would be, does this not reflect on the teachers, on the teachers about the teaching of mathematics, or maybe the attitude? What I want to find out, I just want to find out, is it possible for us, say, to have a questionnaire that where the learners of grade 9 can inform us about the educators, so what is happening in actual fact in the classroom situation, the attitude maybe of the teachers towards the learners and the learners' attitudes, vice versa, type of a thing, to find out whether it's possible to do something. As you allow the learners to write this test, what is it that can be done also just to get some information from the educators themselves, and maybe we can have a different type of outcome specifically based on the grade 9. But all in all, I appreciate the presentation done today. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks for, I think, valuable information on the status of this. I would just like to maybe first ask, currently in our system, if we can be informed, what is the number, it's referring to the appointment of foundation phase qualified teachers to foundation, if we have current stats. How many teachers are not qualified to teach foundation, on qualified specifically for foundation phase? And then obviously this whole thing also is relevant to what we refer to as STEM. And I'm not sure if there's a measurement on the successes. If you look at mathematics in the foundation phase and you go eventually to the choice of math literacy, what is the comparison between the two there? And then I want to speak about libraries, Chairperson, because if you look at the new state of the art schools, we, since our city and all the others started those programs, all schools that were built had like laboratories, it had computer facilities and libraries and kitchens at those schools. How many of those libraries are really equipped? And who of the teachers are responsible for that library? Is it per class, per subject, or is there somebody more qualified, like a librarian type of teacher there? I want to say something. Local government also in many, many villages and townships have built libraries that are actually across the country standing empty with security guards, not a single book inside, and it's vandalized. So have the DBE looked at those facilities that might be available then for this reading campaigns in whatever form they come, as well as possible book clubs? Because, you know, adults have book clubs. I don't know why we don't have book clubs for learners or children in various age groups. I also, I'm very happy we're doing maths for understanding as well, but I would also like to have more specific details on how successful was, up to now, the read for meaning or read for understanding. How successful has that been? I mean, it's great to say we teach learners to read. Personally, I have experience of donating a bookshelf per classroom, and I think those of us, Doctor, would also know, is there were a program of a bookshelf or a reading corner per classroom. What happened to that? I've donated many, 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 many schools with those bookshelves and books and toys, of which none is left. My question about this is not to point fingers, but to actually ask, do teachers understand that if you receive a book or a bookshelf, it is indeed an asset and should be on the asset register of a school? It cannot disappear. That leads me to the question, and I'm very happy for books to home. It's great. I am a bit wary due to experience on whether we would get our books back to school. And I have a great concern due to the history of this country. We have many parents at home or elders looking after our children who actually cannot read at home. What is the purpose of those books to home? Is it like a library system for learners to take books home to go and read and bring back and then take out a new book? Or is it also so that there is a sharing that if they battle to read, somebody at home might be able to assist them to read? The rest, chairperson, I'll call for now. Thank you.
Okay. I take it those are the inputs from the members. Dr. Mabuya, one thing that I would just want to raise, probably first to say that we are just having a concern of the reports that are coming late for our research purposes. For instance, the research is saying that this one came only on Friday, you know, Saturday actually. So I'm just raising it with you. Probably must raise it with the department that our research team is saying the documents are coming late, so they are not able to do a proper research for the members. But back to the presentation. My interest is to find out from the department how do you deal with particularly from grade 1 to 3 or even your grade R phase with the refugees that are coming to our country, for instance, who would be speaking other languages like Islam and you know, Greek and what. How do we support them, especially the teachers that must deal with them, or do we take them to an English straight classes that they must deal with English and not necessarily deal with the languages that they are having? The program that you have mentioned, Dr. Mabuya, of RIP, which I think it should be welcomed. I think it's a good program for our communities, especially in the provinces that you have mentioned as well. But it says here that the Pearl's results of 2016 is reflecting that learners in rural areas performed the worst in. But it's a 2016. Now, here today, we are informed by the study that the costing and funding of this program in particular is not prioritized. Now, I'm trying to go back to the fact that we will always have Western Cape and Gauteng leading as open provinces in terms of our education, till we start to focus and prioritize programs like this, which in my view are very important for our rural communities, to start to fund them proper, to start to make sure that those programs are assisting the communities that are in those provinces. On the problem statement, there is something you've mentioned that of the dropout in our country. Can you briefly tell us, in your view as DPE, what causes dropout? We'll take it randomly. Is this social issues of, you know, drinking, the problems of poverty in our households, your pregnancies and everything? And on the average, what is the statistics of dropout in our education system, in our country? And at the primary phase, are we encountering, because dropout, you would really try to think it can happen more at a senior phase, your high school level. Now, if we do get some dropout at a primary level, the schooling, what could be the causes of smaller children to drop out? And then the other question I'm having is in terms of the mathematics, the performance in particular. I take it, and I'm being biased, that I take it the ones that are performing better are girls at school, but I need you to correct me, because you will correct me based on facts. And is it the fact that it's the girls that probably are performing and are participating in maths in schools? And the other question that I'm having, for interest sake, is this studies that you are doing, the SATMEC teams and the PELS, and I understand you do them in an interval of 5 years, yeah, 4 or 5 years, and what are the improvement plans in between, after you have found out the results of your studies? And this one, the which is my last question, is coupled with what the WIP has asked on the overcrowding. But my issue is, who directs the number of, in provinces for instance, who directs the number of the ratio in classroom? Like, the ratio should be, is it one teacher 25 or one teacher 35? And in an event it happens more than that, who is responsible? Because many people are saying it's the principals, because they get a lot of salary for it. But if that is the case, I also want to find out from DPE, why would the teachers who have more learners be remunerated more? What is the logic behind? Because if that is the case, I think then it's deliberate that you welcome and you want overcrowding. If that is the case, I'm just raising it because I want you to correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm raising it from a layman point of view. I get it, I'm a politician, so I understand as into the academic. So I just need to be corrected. If it's a fact that teachers are being remunerated, I mean principals are remunerated more based on the fact that they've got more learners, is it not deliberate overcrowding then? If that is the case. And on that note, I will hand back over to you, Dr. Mawia, to respond on the issues raised by the men.
Yeah. Thank you, honorable members, for the comments and the questions and inputs that came across. Honorable King, You asked about the policy on automatic progression and how is it going to affect reading. So I must indicate that we are busy working on that because our view is that we have to have sufficient research to inform the decision, especially the implementation part thereof. I know that there have been a number of concerns that were raised after the minister had announced this policy intention. So we are busy working on that so that we make sure that we have sufficient evidence to support this and also to make sure that the implementation is appropriate. So that's what I can say. Obviously, when you talk about automatic progression, it goes along with a lot of support that has got to be provided. For instance, yesterday, we were talking about this whole issue of learners who are failing in grade 1. And the question was to say, if you are saying a child has failed grade 1, what is it that the child has failed in grade 1? Because we are talking about the holistic development of a child at that level. It's a whole lot of things that are being involved there when you talk about holistic development of a child, including things like your fine motor skills. So if you say just blanketly a child has failed, what does it mean? So these are some of the conversations that we are beginning to engage in, so that we should actually be able to support the policy intention and make sure that we close all the gaps. Make sure that when we implement it, we are sure that we implement it correctly. And as I indicated, it goes with a lot of work on the teachers, because the teacher should be able to profile the child appropriately and be able to say, when you go to the next class, this is the package of support that you are supposed to give to the child. So internationally, it is a common practice not to fail learners, not only in the foundation phase, right now. So we are learning from those and saying, how best can we implement this? So that's where we are. And then disabilities, the slides on the statistics regarding the size and shape of primary education. What we have given you there would be stats that relate to public schools. So public schools, as you would know, would include both public ordinary and public special schools. So special schools are also included. What we didn't include is stats from independent schools. Just public ordinary. Multi-grade classes, the use of a toolkit. This is what is actually happening in your RIP project. In the RIP project, this is exactly what they are doing. They are using the toolkit in order to support the teachers and the learners in respect of reading. So the nitty-gritty is regarding the challenges that might be there. I might not be able to communicate them right now unless we do it in writing when we go back to, because the person who is managing the program can then be able to give us those final details regarding the challenge. And the other one is about the usage of retired teachers. I must also hasten to indicate that provinces are very innovative in how they do things. What I'm presenting here is what is almost standard in terms of how we do things. The provision of retired teachers to support the teachers in terms of languages, especially in terms of reading at those lower grades, I must indicate that there are provinces that have made some progress. But as DBE, we haven't as yet adopted that because it's got its own challenges. Very serious challenges. As you would know, one of the challenges would be around the fact that we've got a lot of young people who are not employed. So immediately you make use of retirement, you might also be attracting a lot of criticism to say, how do you then make use of people who are out of employment when you have so much of our youth who are in the mid category, who are neither employed, neither in education nor in training. So these are some of the challenges, but I'm not denying the fact that provinces are quite innovative and they have many ways of using that. And they are able also to negotiate better than DBE. Because if something comes from DBE, the expectation is that we are definitely going to pay some form of, you know, standard. So provinces and the districts are better placed to can get into those negotiations. Then, Honorable Adon, infrastructure implications. Yes, the studies have shown that whatever came out of the studies do have or does have implications for infrastructure, and key amongst them is the issue of overcrowding. So where I'm sitting, I will not be able to answer to issues of infrastructure. But I've noted your concern, and I think maybe this is something that we can also respond on in writing. So we can give a written response to that to say, how do we then? But I must also indicate that some of the challenges that we have in schools with regard to overcrowding are self-inflicted by principals. They do have a situation where a principal, instead of having the particular number of periods that he's supposed to have, then he'd rather overcrowd the classroom such that he doesn't do anything. He doesn't have any periods to offer. Even in terms of teachers, I'm told, this is anecdotal, I'm told that there would be instances where teachers, for them not to have too many periods, they'd rather have the kids one. That's why I'm saying some of them are really not policy matters as such. It is because people want convenience. So this is something I think that we can then respond to in writing. And then learners who are migration of ECD, we have indicated that this does not mean that we are going to take your 0 to 4 year olds or 0 to 2 schools. The whole idea of migration is mainly about the migration of the function, not the migration of the child. So I think the messaging must be very clear, but we're not disputing the fact that as and when we expand, because with great art and great art, it's about now expanding the reach. And if we make them the 2 years to be compulsory, obviously that one will have an element of migration of learners, because we are saying now the 2 years are compulsory. Definitely it will also have an impact on the class sizes and all those things. And this is why I'm saying this one we can definitely respond to in writing. And then the systemic evaluation, definitely we are writing in 2020, and 2021 has been dedicated as a year for the analysis and reporting of the studies. That is 2021. Well, about play, it was just a comment to say that maybe we are on the right track in terms of making sure that learners learn in an environment that will engender creativity, that will engender imaginative minds, and that will make learners to really enjoy what they do. So we really appreciate the comments. And we will definitely report on that going forward. Honorable Senkwaye, infrastructure implications, I've already spoken to that, to say that we are in writing. We all acknowledge that whatever studies that have been conducted do have an implication for infrastructure, and we will report on that.
school library, provision thereof. Honorable members, I think we have spoken about reading corners, we have spoken about this mobile, this and this. So that shows that we have actually moved away from sort of boxing ourselves into your physical, you know, structures that are called library. We are trying to move away from that precisely because of what Honorable Sanabao has also alluded to. It's more about the functionality and the purpose of what we want to do. So that is why I think we haven't been able to report on that. We also have what you call mobile web. So we are looking at different configurations of what you would achieve through library. To say it is done through reading corners, it can be done through mobile. We do have mobile libraries. I'm sure you would have that. We also have online libraries. There are so many now reconfigurations of your libraries. But most importantly, I think, is what Honorable Vanvart referred to in respect of the functionality. So which I think is maybe is something now that we have to focus on, to say wherever they are they really functional? Are they well resourced? Because it's no use for us to report on having so many libraries when they are not functional. So I think it's a point that you've taken note of and that we're definitely focused on. And as we indicated also, libraries, it is the responsibility of provincial education departments to a certain extent, but as you indicated, even local government has got that responsibility. But when it comes to school libraries in particular, I think it is the responsibility of the PEDs as well as DBE in some instances to make sure that it's right. And then the studies that we have referred to in the presentation, especially with regard to the ANA, and even in teams, show that we are not really doing well in grade 9. And I think it's common knowledge by now that our senior faith is our weakest link. And definitely, the studies show that there's a lot that we have to do in terms of grade 9, mathematics in particular. Just yesterday I had a meeting with what you call mathematics education chairs, who are from various universities. I had a meeting which was chaired by, co-chaired it, that myself and Professor Parkin from UCT, specifically focusing on what can be done for teachers in the senior phase in mathematics. So I think very soon we'll be reporting on those programs that we are going to put in place, specifically focus on grade 8 and 9, because we have noticed that that is our biggest link. So we'll be doing some programs with both universities, programs with specifically to capacitate teachers who are teaching math in grade 8 and 9. Although, ironically, teachers who are giving us very good results in mathematics in high school, they are also teaching 8 and 9. So it's also about the attitude. So I think it's also about the attitude. So, and we recently had a round table around the problem of mathematics, and there was this one, a principal from Limpopo, who is producing very good results in mathematics, and he shared with us what his best practices are. And amongst them, he said to us, my best teachers in mathematics, I don't place them in grade 12, I place them in grade 8 and 10. Mm-hmm. So these are some of the things that we are looking into and saying, going forward, if we were to intervene significantly so in grade 9 mathematics, we have also to factor that. Honorable Fanon, and the study around the attitude of teachers and so on. The systemic evaluation that I spoken about.
looked not only at the learner, it's not assessing the learner, it's also assessing the contextual factor, the environment of the school. Do you have the right teachers? Do you have teachers with the right attitude? Are we getting the right support from the district? Do we have, it goes to the extent of even profiling our teachers and profiling our subject assignments. So I think it will come in handy in terms of addressing the matters that you raise.
Another one, current status regarding foundation builder and the profiling of foundation phase teachers. Where I'm sitting, I don't have this particular information, but you can always find out from our HR people whether it is possible to get something like that. And if it hasn't been done in terms of our math teachers, so math is so critical, the possibility is that we might have to start afresh in terms of profiling the foundation phase teacher in implementing some of the recommendations that come from the study. So this is a point that we are taking. And definitely there is a clear link between the performance or the choice of learners when they go to grade 10, 11, 12 in respect of the foundational skills and abilities that we have built. If we have built strong foundational skills at that level, then obviously these learners will choose to do most of them. But unfortunately, that is not the case. But this is not the only thing. At times, even if there's strong foundation that has been laid, then again, it's another incident of self-inflicted ills that we have, where schools themselves might choose to say, no, you are not going to offer math simply because we want to remain number one in the league, or we want to maintain our 100% pass rate. So some of them, yes, I do agree that that foundation is very important, but it could also be, the choice might also be affected by what is happening in the school environment. And libraries, I would not have that information that we requested us, but definitely it's something that can be done in writing, going back home or back to the office. Book clubs, we do have book clubs, but as I indicated, again, it's a matter of the functionality of all these platforms that we have. We might have a book club, but if it does, if it's not well resourced, if it doesn't have somebody who is providing the necessary leadership, then it is just as good as not having that. So I'm saying that it's more about the functionality, which is your major concern. Where are we? How successful have we been in the making sure that learners read with meaning? We have had reports from provinces. We recently had our HEDCOM subcommittee meeting, that is last week, when provinces were reporting on how far are they in this matter. This matter goes well with the issue of tracking the proficiency of learners, which we admit that currently we don't have sort of a standardized instrument that can be used by all provinces, which is something that we have to work on so that we can be able to say to you, in terms of your 10-year-old, this is what you learn. But I was very impressed because you have a province like Gauteng, which is already beginning to do that particular tracking. And I think one of the reasons why we have those meetings and we have provinces reporting is to learn best practices, what other provinces are doing, so that the Free State, I'm told, it is also doing it. I can't remember which other province is doing it.
Western Cape is launching their reading strategies as we can.
Western Cape is also doing that.
And it's not a provincial education department event. It's the entire government of the Western Cape.
So there are provinces that are already beginning to track that, and I think very soon we'll also be announcing to you that we have been able to nationalize this particular instrument for us to can gather data that tells us where we are in terms of our grade. Not only grade 4, but in particular because we'll be responding to the presidential call, then we'll also be sharing that in terms of other grades. Raising corner, I think I've already spoken about that. Our retrieval system remains a challenge, I must say. And if it's a challenge, it means it will also be a challenge in respect of this program. Reading corners and all those things we give them. So there's a big advocacy that is supposed to go with this. Currently what we are doing, we are procuring an electronic LTSM system that has got in it a component that will help us to manage the retrieval. Because it will always be able to tell us as to what is on the stock register or the asset register of the school and so on. So we are busy, I think the delay was from the CITA, SITA, in terms of procurement. But we are in the process of procuring this system, and I'm sure we will be able to report accordingly. And book to home, yes, I think that concern is quite genuine to say, yes, the kids may take the books to school, I mean to home, but who is providing the necessary support? And as we would know that in most cases, our kids come from a child-headed family, right? But even in child-headed families, the possibility is that you could have a child raising to another child, even if there's no parent. But even in the case where you have parents, you might have parents who are completely illiterate. So those are challenges that we are sitting with. But we are also saying the work has to be done at school, and what is done in homes is just to complement what has been done in school. So it means teachers really have to make sure that they do what they are supposed to do. And they could also have support programs. There are schools that do have such support programs for learners. For instance, I know that there's one grandchild of mine who does no longer bring homework to school because at school they have now, but it comes at a price, unfortunately. The parents have to pay because now they have hired extra teachers who are particularly looking into homework and that. So parents have to pay extra. But the nice thing is that now parents are no longer completely, bound to doing homework and so on. So those are things I think that need to be considered as and when we become innovative in terms of supporting teachers. Those retired teachers could also do that in cases where we are making use of them. The coaches could also do that so that you bridge that gap between the school and the home. And Chairperson, we have noted your concern regarding the late submission of students. But I now permit them to indicate that this one in particular was submitted on time. So it's okay. It's an internal matter that you can deal with. Thank you for raising it. And then the refugees, I think she will be able to speak to that because our policy on program requirements and stuff does make provision for that. So she will speak to that. Mrs. Mudiba will speak to that. And Rip, in the rural area. This was a response to what came out of the studies, because the studies are indicating, of course, that kids, our children in rural areas, are not doing as good as those in urban areas. So this came as a result of that. Then we then designed this particular program. We put together a business plan, a proposal first, that went to National Treasury. And National Treasury was able to give us funding out of what they call a budget support program. So there's a budget support program, so they were able to inject some funding in that. So
So that's how we got this. It was not there before. So it's something that came about as a result.
Contributory, dropped out contributory factors. Yeah. There's a basket of contributory factors to drop out. And maybe it's something that we can try to communicate in writing. Honorable Chair, this one of the reasons for drop out is a myriad of factors that are involved here. And maybe also just not to give you information that is not well researched. You can give us time, then we can be able to respond to that. We are wary of just making statements here, and then the next thing we are taken to task to say you have said this, so you should have sufficient evidence to back up our
yeah,
claim.
Because anyway, I still got a... A zero drop out. We've got a. We received this book. I don't know whether it's only me. Yeah. Probably it's going to assist us, but I don't think it's coming from me.
That is why I'm saying maybe we should talk from a well informed position.
Okay.
I hate just to say things and the next thing I can't account for them. And the rate, the dropout rate, will have also to check. Because you know that the statistics are being updated from time to time, so we'll give you the latest to say what is the dropout rate. And then girls' performance in the analysis of the grade 12 results, I think there was that information to say that we got more girls who are participating, but when it comes to performance, then boys would always be outperforming them. So we have that. So we still have that challenge of inequalities. That agenda based in nature. Improvement plan. I've already indicated that the programs that we presented here today are programs that are informed by the studies. So the rest that looks linkage between what the studies are saying and our programs going forward. But we continue also to go back to the diagnostic results and saying how best can we address this one? What else can we add? So this is something that we do on a continuous basis. Who directs the number of the ratio that is your teacher? This is more of a matter of HR, and I think it's about the norms in post-provisioning related. So we will definitely provide the answer to that.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. And then I will then ask Mudiva to address that matter of refugee children who come to our country.
Okay, thank you, DDG. Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Perhaps before I speak to the issue of refugees, let me just further emphasize a point that Dr. Maboya made with regards to book clubs in schools. And she has in one of the slides, I think it's slide number 78, mentioned strategic partners, and she indicated that it's not an exhaustive list. We have AFBOP that is also assisting us in issues of literacy. And the schools that have established book clubs, in many of the schools, I have been informed by the official who's responsible for this. He tells me that they are following the library guidelines that the DBE has developed, and many of these book clubs are actually functional. And there's a criteria that is used to measure their functionality and the impact they have. And AFBOP sponsors prizes, because in some instances for some of these programs to work, especially if it is done outside of the teaching time, you need to provide some kind of an incentive. So AFBOP is sponsoring us in that regard. Unfortunately, we cannot say that it's an annual thing because the sponsorship depends on the availability of funding. But we do have a functional book clubs in all the provinces. And some of the prizes would include material that encourages learners to read, such as your dictionaries. I thought I needed to make that clear. And it targets the intermediate phase, your grade 4 to grade 6. With regards to the issue of refugees, we have you know, it's common knowledge that many of our urban centers, where because of job opportunities, we have an influx of refugees, of children who come outside of the borders of South Africa, mostly from the neighboring countries. And when you look at our policy with regards to the national policy on the program and promotion requirements, it says that in the foundation phase, which is your grades R-3, learners have to be taught in their home languages. And in some of these schools, you would have, for example, children who whose parents are from Zimbabwe or Mozambique. So in some instances, they would opt to register or enroll their children at a school that offers isiZulu, for example, because we can only offer our curriculum in the official languages. And that in itself tends to create problems because this is not the language that the child speaks at home.
Mm.
So it becomes very problematic, but it is the parent who decides to take the child to that particular school.
Mm.
And we must also understand that you know, there are variances with regards to the socio-economic status of some of these refugees. There are those parents who can afford to enroll their children at fee-paying schools. So some of them would take them to schools where the language of learning and teaching is English because it's easily accessible. And these are fee-paying schools, so obviously the parents would afford to pay school fees. Now, when it comes to the promotion and progression requirements of the refugee learners, we do make provision for them. For example, we offer the curriculum in the 11 official languages, and then there's also, learners are required to offer two languages, one at home language level and then another one at first additional language level. So we do provide concessions for learners. It is very clear in the policy that at this particular grade, if a child, for example, is coming from, let's say, from the DRC,
mm.
and they have opted to go to an X Model C school where teaching and learning is offered in English, they need to have a second language. So in some instances, it would be Afrikaans,
mm.
or it could be Sesotho or isiZulu, for example. So if they offer, if they opt to choose that language, then we will provide concessions. In other words, the promotion requirements to the next grade, we have sort of lowered them, you know, just to accommodate such learners. So it is very clear in the national policy pertaining to the program and promotion requirements of the national curriculum statement, grades up to 12. Thank you.
I think, yeah, they have done very well in responding to all questions, Dr. Mbuya. And we are okay. I don't see any, and we are fine.
I have a good question that I'll leave it for the DG. Just the interest in
comment.
I won't ask a question, just a comment. I just want to comment on years to come. When we speak, for example, like she just mentioned, Doctor, that children would stay behind school as an extra cost where learners would go. I mean, maybe not too long in the future we would have full day schools because there's nobody better to assist a learner who has difficulties with homework than a qualified teacher. That's a thought.
Yeah, we'll think about it.
Thank you.
No, thank you very much. Then the team from DPE, we will allow you to leave the venue whilst we stay behind for adopting the minutes.
What is not
my thing in
COVID?
That's all you want.
Where are you coming from?
No, but you must ask me in private.
Why must I ask you in private when you went out in public?
What are the opportunities?
No, I think you're thinking.
Yeah, I was curious, man. I'm giving you a copy of my program.
Madam van der Waal, how are you? They said in
can you bring me a spoon, my brother?
Soon.
No improvement.
Soon.
Oh, cool.
Thank you.
So what must we do? Not you, we. We must go there, make the joint force, you and I. That's our
problem. These are the main areas.
Let's start off the minute quickly, honorable members, so that we can get out of here. It's just this. My board. You are tired of what? It's March.
You are too young to get tired.
It's March the 10th today.
I've never read them, but I've never written a word. For me, it's not different.
You will stress as long as this conference is not over.
Yeah,
you will be tired. All right. Honorable members, we've got minutes of the 3rd of March. We had our presentation on the update and migration of the development of the